Hello, welcome. Come in, come in. We are going to get started. Hello. So nice to see so many familiar faces. Hi, hi. Okay. I think we should go. All right, we're getting started. Hi, everyone. I'm Sari Kravitz. I am the Dean of Student Life in the primary school at Hillel Torah. And thank you. And what does that mean? I deal with student culture. And school student behavior and promoting a positive experience for every student at Hillel Torah. And I've been at Hillel Torah for 12 years. I taught prior to being the Dean of Students, and I'm here with Tamara Shepis.
Hello, good morning. It's a pleasure to be here, and even more of a pleasure to be presenting today with Sari Kravitz. My name is Tamara Shamas. I am the Director of Professional Development at REACH. I have the great fortune of working with many of you in many of our schools to consider ways that we support the students who don't always fit in the box. So Sari and I have a lot of opportunities to have very rich conversations about how we support those students, which really is how we came up with our topic for today's conversation.
And so Tamara and I have been meeting for many years, but what brought us together was collaborative problem solving. And you've probably heard the acronym CPS a lot, but collaborative problem solving supports students with challenging behavior, and we have the mindset of it's skill, not will. And kids who are struggling in school lack the skills, not the will, to be successful. And so we believe all kids and adults are doing the best they can with the skills they have. And if they're not successful, there's something that's getting in the way. And Tamara and I have agreed to kind of launch our conversations from that perspective. And as teachers and administrators and support staff, it's our job to engage all students. And sometimes it's hard to engage all students. And sometimes the students that seem the most disengaged and who are the most challenging are really hard to reach. And we're hoping that today we can give you some concrete strategies to engage those students that are the hardest to reach.
I thought of this analogy that I wanted to share. We work with an amazing strategic consultant who once gave us the metaphor. She said, "You can't poke a hole if you don't have anything to fill it with." And I think so often we collectively, not one individuals, poke holes. We have students who are hard to reach, and we, again, societally, are quick to label this kid is this kid is that. And sometimes we don't have holes to fill that very poked bucket with. And so the goal of today is really to give you ideas for how to fill the holes and simple strategies that probably are things you've all heard of. I'm looking around the room and I see many, many very, very talented educators who are probably doing all of these things already. And we know that teaching those hard to reach students is challenging and hard. And so if you can be inspired by some of your fellow teachers who will be highlighted in today's presentation, the goal is to really just give you that encouragement and that chizuk, if you will, for continuing to support our most challenging kids.
So, can you guys hear me if I talk without the microphone?
Yes.
Yes? Everyone in the back, can you hear me okay? No? Okay. I'll use the microphone.
All right, so the strategies that we're going to be presenting today come from this book, Motivating Students Who Don't Care, and the book is organized into five principles. Next one. Five principles, and from these five principles, we are going to share different strategies that align with each principle. So we're going to be touching on emphasizing effort, creating confidence and hope, valuing involvement and influence, building relationships, and sparking enthusiasm for learning.
Okay, and with each strategy, with each principle, excuse me, we're going to be presenting different teacher examples for you to see. So the first one is emphasizing effort. We're a lot about achievement and we're a lot about grades, but we have to remember that we have to emphasize the effort. So this quote we really liked: many unmotivated students who fail simply do not try because they believe they have very little control over what happened. That can change. When students experience success, that closely connects to their effort, right? So how do we help emphasize effort? We do things like allow redos, retakes, and revisions. The first grade a student gets doesn't have to be the final grade. We want to give them opportunities to feel success, however small or large that might be. It's really important that when we talk to students, we separate the idea of effort from achievement, right? Our achievement doesn't always show the effort we put in. I know that growing up, I would put many, many hours into studying for my math tests. The results I got on the test did not always reflect the many hours that I spent studying. So considering the effort that our students are putting in, even if, the final result does not match that. Encouraging small improvements every single day and celebrating milestones. So just a few examples of how we do that. Anyone ever see this amazing TED Talk by Rita Pearson, one of my favorites? We're gonna show you just a small example of how she emphasizes effort. All right, we're just getting to the time.
Quiz, 20 questions. Student missed 18. I put a +2 on his paper and a big smiley face. He said, "Miss Pearson, is this an F?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Then why'd you put a smiley face?" I said, "Cause you on the roll. You got 2 right, you didn't miss them all." I said, "And when we review this, won't you do better?" He said, "Yes, ma'am, I can do better. You see, minus 18 sucks all the life out of you. +2 said I ain't all bad."
Every time I watch it, I get the chills. Right? That's just a small shift. Sucks the life out of you when it's minus 18. +2 says you're on the road. You're getting there. However you translate into your classroom, that is a perfect example of recognizing effort and not only achievement. Let's get off of this TED Talk, Sarah. Can you go to the next slide? Your handouts. Is someone passing around the handouts? Can you pass around the handouts? Like I said, we want to highlight teachers, so he's not in the room right now, but I'd like to highlight the efforts and accomplishments of Rabbi Shlomo Kaplan, who's a 4th grade Rebbe at Ari Krem. He does an amazing job at helping his students emphasize not only their achievement, but their efforts. So in the handouts that Mrs. Kaplan is handing around, thank you so much, you have from Rabbi Kaplan about 2 of the verses that he has hanging up in his room and stories that he goes back to all the time to help his students recognize not only their achievements, but their efforts. And I'll add a personal anecdote to that because I have the good fortune of having one of my sons in his class this year. Over winter break, we came home from vacation and there was a letter addressed to my son. I said, "Ellie, you have a piece of mail." He opens it up. It's a personal letter from the Rebbe, recognizing all the effort that he's put into the year thus far and telling him how excited he is for the rest of the year and the next semester with him. Now, it wasn't only my son who received that letter. I'm positive that every boy in the class received that letter. But what an impactful way to show the boys, "I recognize your effort and I'm proud of everything you're doing." So your first handout will be an example of what Rabbi Kaplan does. Principle number 2.
All right, this one is create confidence and motivation. So confidence and motivation is the precursor to effort. So I was trying to think of an example of how I can relate this to my life and how you can relate it to yours. Oh, I didn't realize it was just the picture. So when I stepped into this role as dean of students, I was not confident and I was very nervous because I was going to have a lot of challenging conversations. And I've had challenging conversations before as a teacher in the classroom, but as an administrator, it felt like higher stakes. And I was going into this really challenging conversation with a parent, and a teammate of mine helped build the confidence and the hope in me that I was gonna be able to do this because I've done it before. And just that little nod, just that small positive reinforcement from my teammate helped me have the confidence to move forward with the conversation. So we have 3 different strategies to support confidence and hope. And one of them is encouraging supportive affirmations. A supportive affirmation is not just for kids, but it can be for students too. Above my desk in my office, I have the words, "What's best for kids?" And whenever I'm dealing with something challenging in the school, I look at my affirmation above my desk that says, "What's best for kids?" And it helps guide me towards the right answer. And these are 2 other, well, you might think they're cliche, these are 2 other positive affirmations that you can have in your classroom. I know there's 3rd grade teacher at Hillel Torah Mrs. Stephanie Hornberg, and her classroom affirmation is, we respect each other's learning. It's printed, it's hung up all around the classroom, and she weaves it into every aspect of her day when redirecting students, when getting started in the morning, when setting expectations for learning. We respect each other's learning. And it's part of their classroom, and this is just one way you can bring that to your students, is picking a strategy, weaving it into every aspect of your classroom, maybe even picking an affirmation for yourself. Okay, so this was the first slide, the first page in a deck or a slideshow that three Hillel Torah teachers were working on. And so they took this idea of failure and flipped it on its head and created a positive connotation with failure. So if we can create that for our students, if we can tell them we accept their mistakes and we welcome them and they're an opportunity for learning, we have created such a wonderful place for children to grow and learn. Because if children are not making mistakes, then that doesn't mean that they're growing. They need to make mistakes to see how they can grow from them. And these three teachers at Hillel Torah, if you want to go to the next slide. Give me a second, I'll introduce it. So this is a clip of the kind of environment we want to create for failure in our classroom. This is a video that these teachers show to their students. So it's quick.
Okay, that should do it. It's so exciting. Let her rip, Lewis.
Quickly, Uncle Joe can't hold on much longer. Everybody ready?
Go, Carl.
Our students this feeling that every failure is a chance to move forward will improve their confidence and their motivation and their effort. So Noah Boltman, Shannon Dineen, and Yigal Kakon at Hillel Torah are creating a museum of failures to highlight how students have failed and learned from them. So they're going to create, by the end of the year, students have been reflecting on all their failures, and they're going to case all their iterations of failure and reflect on how they've grown to highlight how important it is to make mistakes and learn from them and capitalize on the fact that failures are important and they're expected and they're welcome.
And I just want to draw your attention. I'm not sure if you got all the handouts or if they're coming single-handedly, but if you didn't get them, we'll give it to you at the end. When we asked them for these examples, they also shared an article that I found so moving, The Blessing of Failure, 7 Steps to Building Spiritual Resistance. And it's an article that was featured in the Jewish Action with the Torah perspective on failure with different write-ins from well-known Torah educators in our world. It's a beautiful article. I encourage you to share it, depending on your student's age, with students, with parents, and it really talks about the value of failure.
And so another way to highlight and build confidence and hope is to give students a chance to compete with themselves. So this is an example of a reading stamina graph, and I used this when I think I taught second grade and fourth grade. And so students had this graph for themselves, and the goal was to improve their reading stamina, how long they could read without being interrupted. And the only eyes that would go on this were their own, and the only person they were competing with was themselves. So when they were held to a standard of high achievement, they wanted to achieve more. And it could be small incremental growth, maybe 1 minute, maybe 30 seconds more of reading stamina each day. But building this stamina in them helped give them confidence and hope and made them move forward with greater effort because they wanted to improve on their own skills. So I ask you, how can you create
this opportunity for your students. Maybe it isn't reading stamina. Maybe it's how quickly you can move through math facts, or I don't know, just you can ask yourself, even if you don't teach reading, you could still use this idea of challenging students against themselves in your own classroom.
I wasn't going to say this, but I just thought of an example. I used to teach a small group of fifth grade resource for Chumash, and those of you who teach Jewish studies will recognize that for some students, the timeline of like who came first, did Abraham come before Moshe, and when was Noah, it always gets a little bit confusing for students. So we would create a timeline of, you know, the order of events. But it was a timeline that you could put off and on. And so I would challenge the students and say, okay, let's see what you can do. This time we got 3 out of place. The next time we got 2 out of place. Look how much you're growing. You're getting better and better. So we saw it as an opportunity to challenge each other and challenge ourselves when it came to working on something that was hard. The third principle, and as we're going through this, we really hope that you're thinking of, for each principle, what's something that I can take back to my classroom, right? Number one, how can I recognize efforts over achievement? Number two, how can I instill more confidence and hope in my students? Number three, valuing involvement and influence. And I think of this one as promoting classroom citizenship, right? How can we create this classroom where everyone feels like a participating citizen, if you will? Students' motivation is enhanced when they have some autonomy, feel respected, and embrace a sense of ownership by participating and making decisions that affect them. So if you've taken CPS training with me, you know we talk a lot about choice, and I always have to say, don't worry, I'm not telling you to run the classroom where students rule and they get to make all the choices. But I am saying, how can we create opportunities to give students choice within the classroom? It's like the classic example of kids at home. They have to brush their teeth. You're just giving them an option. Do you want to brush them before you get into pajamas or after you get into pajamas, right? Small things like that. How can we create opportunities for students to feel value and involvement in the classroom? So a few ways we can do this is we can build mindfulness, because mindfulness helps bring students centered and attentive in the classroom. We offer choice and we invite students to teach. So for some examples of that, first we'll hear from Mrs. Kayla Shadari Crown.
That was based off of The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. If you know that book, it's one of my favorites, one of my top most read nonfiction books. So
can you hear?
And I watered it down for the kids so that it was on their level. But they really, the most feedback I got off of that wasn't so much the content, but more so that they really enjoyed being treated as adults. And they really enjoyed, it wasn't so much frontal teaching, more a class discussion, especially starting on habit number one on expanding your circle of influence and how we can do that. They really enjoyed just talking about adult topics and being treated as an adult. And I saw how much that helped their confidence. I think a big thing to add in here also is that you truly have to believe that your students are smart, that they're capable, that they can do these things, and then that translates over to them, because I think sometimes we all underestimate how much kids understand, and they pick up vibes more than anything else. So if I truly believe that they're capable, confident, smart, they can have responsibility, they can have ownership, they can make the right choices, then that will translate over to them.
There's another point on this topic, what we were just talking about earlier today, with my CBS group, with Mrs. Tamar Thomas, shout out to you. But we were talking about that when you are having a problem with a student, asking for their suggestions, which is part of a plan we talk, is like really helpful. And an example that I had, which I told you also, is there's a girl, as we have in every class, that she chats a lot and she talks and talks and talks no matter who they're next to. And I literally asked her, like, where in the room can I put you so that you won't talk so much? And she had a great idea. Like, I'll move her around, switch those two, put me there in the corner. And I was like, great, let's try it. And it's all part of that same thing of believing in these children and these students and believing in them and their suggestions that they're valid and that they're valuable.
There are other ways to give choice aside from, you know, where you're sitting in the classroom. I mean, this is really tiny and I don't expect you to be able to read that, but it's an example of an end project menu. So these are all different menus. So when I was teaching seventh grade, I gave students 8 different choices of end of the year projects they could choose from so that they felt some ownership and autonomy and choice. And then that creates more buy-in, then they're more likely to want to engage and actually complete the work. Here's an example of a spelling menu that was on homework. So instead of having them do the same activity every night, students can choose how they want to demonstrate their understanding. And this also can go for students who are struggling with excess energy in the classroom. This was a menu I made of ways the student could calm down in the classroom and they could, or outside of the classroom, and they could choose. So the sense of ownership created buy-in, and students wanted to do better because they owned the choice in their learning. So one of the other strategies is inviting students to teach. So when teaching seventh grade, you can go but pause it. Seventh grade English, we had these Common Core state standards that we needed to fulfill, and I could have had the students present on a book that we read as a class, but I decided I wanted students to feel the ownership, and so I asked them to present on a topic that was meaningful to them. We were still going to check all the boxes of the Common Core state standards that we needed to cover, but when the kids got to choose their topic, they felt excited about it. They wanted to prove to their classmates that they understood the topic that they were presenting on. So this is Aiden Rich. I think he's a junior here now. And he presented on investing, which is something I really don't know much about. And he was able to teach me and his classmates about it, which made him so excited. He's such a bright student. For those of you who have taught him, he's a harder student to reach because he's so bright. But giving him the chance to present on a topic that was meaningful to him and teach his classmates helped him move forward in my class and feel challenged. So we're not going to watch the whole thing. It's 10 minutes, 7 minutes long. But
do you want me to play it?
Yeah, we'll show a short clip.
People are great paper that people use to buy things. When someone finds something they want to get at a store, they simply take the item, wait in line, go to the green paper, and now that item is theirs to keep. But what does it actually do, and how is it really important? Money can do more for you than just buy things. Money can even make you more money. But if you don't know how to use it and save it right, it could come back to haunt you in the long run. One of the most common questions asked in the entire world is, how can I get money? Luckily, this question has a lot of answers. One way to make money as a teenager is to, well, work for it.
So, as you can see, Aiden presented a lovely presentation on investments that still kind of went over my head. But he really bought into it. He
honed his presenting skills. He was working the room and talking to his classmates,
which are all the things that I wanted him to practice. He built that deck himself. He also ended up writing an essay about it and turned it in for a grade. So these were all ways to get his buy-in and
pay forward in a way that worked for him. We'll do our best.
Number 4, building relationships, which is probably front and center and the cornerstone to everything we're trying to do in the classroom. And the truth is, everything we've spoken about
until now really does help to build relationships, but we'll talk specifically about building relationships. This was a quote from one of the hard-to-reach students about what teachers need to do, why it's important. Students can feel when teachers care about them. You can just feel when they are really interested in you as a person. You can actually feel them rooting for you to do well. Because of that, you want to do better in the class. If I ask all of you to think about the most impactful teachers in your life, my guess is that you would tell me that that teacher relationship shared the same sentiment. That teacher cared if you did well, and somehow that care was conveyed to you. Is that a fair assumption to make about the teachers that were the most impactful for us? So again, looking around the room, I know so many of us are already doing this so amazingly. And how do we make sure that we all care?
How do we really make sure that that sentiment and that feeling is conveyed not just to the students that are easy to teach, but most especially to our hardest students? How do we make sure that they know that we're really rooting for them? So, again, these are all things we already know, but we're just taking the time to remember them. Getting to know students' personal interests, right? Getting to know our students for the people that they are. I just came back from a conference where I had the opportunity to hear from many people in the field speak about education, and there was a head of school from California who said a line that was so meaningful. She said, when I interview teachers, I don't interview a teacher to teach math. I interview a teacher to teach students. I want them to know math, and I want them to have the content subject, but first and foremost, they're here to teach students. So getting to know our students' personal interests, sending notes, or I would say just in general, communicating with our students, and inviting student feedback. So our first example, I'll stop here before we go, is from Rabbi Fliegelman, shout out, he's in the room, Rebbe at Ida Crown Jewish Academy, who excels at building relationships with students, and he sat down with me for a short interview to tell us a little bit more about how he does this.
So Rabbi Fliegelman, can you give us some examples about how you build relationships with students?
Sure. First of all, it's all about building relationships and creating partnerships with the parents, so that the students realize that we're all on the same team, we're communicating, the parents, the school, and the student has an appreciation of what's taking place. I personally have a small enough class and I'm able to reach out to parents and start that relationship building from before school even begins, in late August. I invite myself over to the parent's home. I want to meet the student, I want the student to meet me to feel comfortable. And I found that the parents truly appreciate my visits. They get a better understanding of what I want as far as curriculum is concerned. And perhaps most importantly is that the students gain a sense of confidence and ease. They know, and they understand who I am, that I'm on their side. I want them to be able to grow as a student, and I will take them from where they are to the next point in a positive manner.
Anything else?
As far as relationship building. Okay, I think a byproduct of relationship, what could happen is the reality of being able to communicate to parents, and even when the times come to get that there's situations that are arising, there's a greater sensitivity that the parents will be willing to accept that feedback. So I don't know, that's something we should
point out. Yeah, absolutely. And what about some examples of things you do in the classroom to help build relationships with students, especially the ones who struggle or seem to be less motivated?
I think within the classroom setting, one of the great opportunities is use of technology. What I mean there is taking out a smartphone, taking pictures, again, working within the framework of the your school to make sure that everything is acceptable and okay to do, but I found that, for instance, when students lead the prayers, I'll take a snapshot and then send that picture straight off, not using the school's website, but straight from my phone to the parent and saying, hey, attaboy to your son, he just led the davening, great. And the feedback I get every time I send this to the parent is thank you so much. It also endears me with the student, because the student appreciates the accolades. And it's automatic, it's on the spot. And I think that can be done through any type of work when the student is up at the board. I don't know about sending a video, but I think a picture is worth a thousand words, and it enhances that relationship, and you continue to build, and every teacher will find their own way of how to exactly go about that. But incorporating the parents into the learning process and allowing them to feel that they're part will go a long way in, first of all, taking away frustration from the teacher, where they don't feel that it's just me and the kid and we're not getting anywhere. Because the reality is the teacher is the conductor of his or her class. It's important for them to give the feedback to academic service, social work, assistant principal. It's within the teacher's realm to take care of the situation.
Thank you, Rabbi Fliegelman. This is an example that the teacher shared with me. I'll give shout outs where they're due. This is from Ramalti Steinfeld, who is a first grade Laura at RE Crown. In the context of a collaborative problem solving training where we were talking about having conversations with students, a lot of times teachers express concerns about students not being interested in having a sit down conversation with them. Many of our more challenging students have bad associations, negative associations with talking to authority. They think they're gonna get in trouble. So she had a student that she was really attempting to build a relationship with, but the student didn't want to talk to her. So she tried to get creative and she found a very interesting solution, and maybe you've tried this before. The girls would come in, and every morning for one of these students that she had a hard time reaching, she would leave a post-it note on this girl's desk. Good morning, Sarah, so happy you're here today. And she kind of continued with that consistently until a few weeks in, at the end of the day, she would notice that the girl left a note for the Mora on the desk, and they started to have a dialogue through sticky notes. So they didn't need to have that face-to-face, but she just used something as small as a post-it note to let her student know, I care about you, I'm here for you, I'm interested in having a relationship with you. And through sticky notes, they were able to build a relationship. So small, you know, out-of-the-box creative thinking about how we build relationships goes a very, very long way. Two examples, the inviting student feedback handout is there. This is a handout that comes from the book. Feedback, right? Feedback is a whole other topic that we could talk about. As professionals, we need feedback to know what we do well and what we want, what we need to do better. And we usually get that feedback from our supervisors. How often do we take an opportunity to get feedback from the people that we spend most of our days with, from the students that we work with? So it might seem, super out there in terms of asking feedback from our students, but this is another way not only to value involvement and influence, this is actually a different principle, but to also build relationships. We give our students feedback all the time, but what about eliciting feedback from them about how we're doing? Telling the students, give me feedback, I'm curious to know. Obviously, we need to have parameters and norms for how we do this. We don't want to open up a can of worms. We don't want to create a venting session or a complaint session. But eliciting feedback from our students is another way to send that message of, I care about you and I care about what you think. So there is one handout going around with examples of ways that we can invite student feedback. And I'll let Sari talk about another example that she had.
So while I was prepping for this talk today, I searched in my Google Drive feedback forms that I had given to my students. And this was a form that I made on Google Classroom that I sent out to my students during COVID. And it's kind of blurry because it's a screenshot, but it says, Mrs. K was teaching too fast, too slow, or just right. Mrs. K engaged me in the learning or just talked at me. I wanted to know how I was doing as an online Zoom teacher and get their feedback. And I don't have it here, but 36 students responded and gave me meaningful feedback so that I could make their learning on Zoom a little bit more tailored to what they needed. And in turn, they felt like I could still hear from them from across the screen. So this was a way not to open a can of worms because I kept it really tight and focused online, but it gave me great feedback and it helped them feel connected to me even though we were on a screen at the time.
So again, invite you to think about ways, either by the ones that we've given you examples of, or just think to yourself, how can I ask my students for feedback? It can be a thumbs up, thumbs down, it could be a 0 to 5. We know all the different teaching strategies when it comes to eliciting feedback to make sure that the content is being understood, but how can we elicit feedback about the relationship and about how we're doing as a teacher in general? Last principle that we'll talk about.
Okay, so our motivational goal for every lesson should be to convey our message with enthusiasm, emotion, and conviction, which I feel like Tamara and I are trying to do right now. We're trying to model this for you as we speak in front of you today. We should make it as relevant as we can to the lives of our students and at least occasionally display a sense of humor. So on that note, the next video we're going to show is from a popular movie called Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Some of you may have seen it, some of you may have not seen it, but it's exactly what we don't want to be as teachers.
In 1930, the Republican-controlled House of Representatives, in an effort to alleviate the effects of the, anyone? The Great Depression, passed the, anyone? The tariff bill, the Pauley-Smoot Tariff Act, which anyone raised or lowered? today we have a similar debate over this. Anyone know what this is, class? Anyone? Anyone know what the new curves point?
So we want to be enthusiastic, we want to be funny, we want to engage our students in a way that is meaningful to us. So hopefully I engaged you all with that video. But letting students know how much you love being their teacher, showing your enthusiasm for teaching, being lighthearted, grabbing their interest and attention, and encouraging movement, drama, and music. We're gonna show you examples of all of these in a moment.
I was going to ask you.
Oh, good. I actually want to add an anecdote here. Anyone have an opportunity to hear of Dov Singer from Lifnai Lifnim? Anyone know who I'm talking about? Rabbi Singer is revolutionizing the way that we think about student-teacher relationships, I think all relationships in general. And I had the opportunity to sit in a gathering with him, and he talked about this exact point about needing to be lighthearted and use humor. And somebody said, well, what if I'm a teacher who's just not so funny? So he said, teachers who are not so funny or can't figure out a way to use humor in the classroom should go work on computers. So again, we're not comedians. My husband will remind me I'm not the funniest person, but are there ways that we can bring lightheartedness? Teaching is hard. Students struggle. It's hard. And if we don't have a sense of humor about it sometimes, we will drive ourselves into a hole. It's so hard. So how can we just bring lightheartedness, not only for our students, but for ourselves as well? There's so much to say about the importance of bringing lighthearted, humorous attitudes towards the classroom. And like Sari said, we have so many excellent examples out of that.
So hold on.
So the examples you're about to see are of Maura Orr-Ruvain. She's a shlicha at Hillel Torah. She teaches first grade and fourth grade. And I want you, I'm not going to tell you what she does. I'm going to ask you to notice what she does when she greets her students and how she brings the sense of enthusiasm and lightheartedness into her classroom. So we have two examples. This is of her fourth grade and this is of her first grade. Enthusiasm in her students and engage them. Any brave souls out there? Yes.
She's making it like age appropriate and friendly and like inviting.
For sure. What else? Yes.
Greeting her students before they walk in.
Right. Sorry.
What was the question?
Closing the door. That's how she greets them.
Oh, no, she was lighthearted, like she was greeting each student, saying hello. You could see her kind of guiding them in with her arm, and then she was being silly and playful by saying, all right, I'm getting started, I'm closing the door. Like, she didn't take herself too seriously, right? It made me smile when I saw her do that. You can't tell from this video, but she's masking taped this letter to her forehead, which I think is just lighthearted in itself to have a teacher come in front of you with a, I don't know what letter that is.
Cuff.
Cuff. Okay, thank you. But she stuck it to her forehead and she's holding up these nikudot and she's getting the students to engage, and it's a fun way instead of just having them, you know, read across the paper. She's being silly and playful with them, which I think goes a long way in engaging them.
And I just want to say, this is an elementary example. We have a lot of high school teachers in the room, but I think the concept and strategy can be applied across the board. I remember when I was in high school and we learned about certain periods in history, a teacher would come in dressed up, right, as that historical period. If we were doing something about in an English class, right, we would find ways to kind of like take ourselves into that time. So there's lots of different ways to do this in the different grades.
And two
I have to pause it again.
Okay. Two other examples I found when I was digging into the archives of my Google Drive. I let students pie me in the face when I talk for third grade. My friends in the audience also got pied in the face. I think Iris Cass, who was a gym teacher at the time, also got pied in the face. And it was a fun way that the kids had earned this opportunity. One student got the chance to pie us in the face. And it was funny, it was lighthearted, it showed the class that I didn't take myself too seriously, and we all giggled together, and it was from our token economy. The class had worked together to earn this prize. And so I'm not asking you to go in your classroom and get pied in the face, but I'm asking you to think about a way to connect with your students in a way that would make them laugh and make it meaningful for them. And then and I'll show you that clip in a second, but this clip was from like 10 years ago. The Blackhawks were in the Stanley Cup, and my kids were really excited about it. And so I thought, what's a way that I could bring that cultural element, what's going on in our world and what's exciting to them at the time, into my classroom? We made up a game of floor hockey where students would stand in a plank and we crumpled up a piece of paper and they had to try to score on each other. So it was a great brain break, a great way for them to get movement into the classroom learning environment and to bring something that was appealing to them from the outside of school, inside of school, and connect with something that was meaningful to them. So you can see me get pied in the face by your bell.
Okay, so before we wrap up, we want to give you a few minutes to reflect. We know that we didn't officially give out a reflection sheet, but I think most of you have a pen or a sheet of paper. Can you go back to the principles one? We're going to put the five principles up again and ask you to think back to the strategies that we spoke about and really now think about your classroom, your setting, your school, right? What goes and what doesn't go in your school. We offered a plethora of strategies. What are you already doing that you want to really remember to kind of bring to the surface of your day-to-day teaching? And or what are some ideas that you now have that you want to take back to your settings to try? Because these kind of strategies aren't just going to reach the students that are hard to reach. These are strategies that are going to engage everybody. So we're going to give you a two-minute quiet reflection to really think about these five principles and how you might begin to incorporate some of the strategies that we talked about today into your classroom tomorrow. I'll set a timer. Take about another minute. Before we reflect on the commitments that you made, we want to take, intentionally, take the opportunity to learn from the collective wisdom in the room, because we shared some examples from the field, many examples from Sari's classroom, which we're so lucky to have such a master teacher to share her own expertise with us. What are you doing? What are you doing in your classroom related to these five principles that you could share with other teachers here? The power of a PD day is that we get to all be together and learn from each other. So let's use the collective wisdom in the room to learn from one another. What are strategies that you use that really work for you, that you feel comfortable sharing with others? And if you don't mind just speaking loudly so that everyone can hear you. Can you just say your name, please?
Hi, I'm Sarah Roth, and so one of the things I'm doing this year is being an assistant in the second grade.
Okay.
And we have some challenging students, as all classrooms do. And what I wanted to help out with was to motivate the students who aren't interested in learning. And I got a bunch of star-shaped sticky notes. And when the students are displaying some even very small behavior that's positive, I'll write, so-and-so was listening nicely during reading class, and I'll hand it to them quietly, and then the teacher made a chart, and they can hang their little sticky notes, and they don't get a prize for it, but they really value the recognition.
So taking opportunities to notice the good and reflect that back to your students. Thank you. I know you guys are good at what you do. We want to hear more strategies. Yes, you can start it off and you can make it.
Girl that would
come
class every single day, and I had to motivate her and do something, and also.
Are doing is they're learning to write in journals, and I will take every single child's journal each time they write an entry, and I'll respond in writing, and it ends up being a way that the children have just discovered that we can communicate our feelings through writing. It's very exciting, and often their next journal entry will be a response to what I have written, and it ends up being an ongoing dialogue, which is very exciting for them. And parents have told me that years and years have passed and they still keep their children's journals, just because that's such a precious thing for them and their child to remember about the relationship they had with their first grade teacher.
Beautiful. Thank you. Anybody else want to share? Oh, yes.
My name is Sam Biber. I teach at Hillel Torah in the morning and the Weizenheider in the afternoon. See a little bit of both worlds. And one of the things we were talking about, fun, and trying to make the kids see that you're a normal person also, and I see them as normal also. Each day, I don't know how many of you know this, but there's actually a national holiday on each day of the month. And I went through a ball, and each day we begin, that's how the day begins. They think they're having fun, but they're also learning at the same time, whether it's a science-related or a math, literature, anything that I could come up with. I actually opened their eyes on National Pirate Day when I came in talking to them, you know, shivered me timbers, and they had no clue what I was saying. I told them the story of Peter Pan, and that's the first time any of them ever heard that story. I got several calls from parents telling me that that was a great story. We never knew about Peter Pan either. And it kind of, I try to open their eyes, all with the blessings of the school, and make sure that when the day begins, it's fun, it's exciting, and that helps the learning process for the rest of the day.
Thank you.
That's great. Yes. This will be our last one.
Thank you. I often start my class with a my teaching rate. So we do Wordle and rate. And
high school,
11th, 12th grade. And they really, really love it. When I don't start with a game, they're kind of the same. But yeah. But it helps them also come up with words when you read, and it's like connected, but it also, that starts with fun.
Thank you. I'm going to do something unconventional and end with a moment on theory, because all of this is a good idea, but it's based in theory. The theory, this is called the self-determination theory, which talks about the three components of intrinsic motivation. If you've done CPS training, you know all about it. The three components of CPS, of intrinsic motivation, excuse me, and I like to present it with a mashal, with a metaphor. We're all professionals who go to work every day. So imagine that you got up in the morning to go to work and you thought three things to yourself. Number one, I feel like I don't actually know what I'm doing. I feel like I'm faking it till I make it. Number two, I feel like I have a supervisor who breathes down my back. I don't have any sense of doing things creatively or in my own way. Everything is dictated to me. And number three, I really don't feel any connection to the students that I teach or the teachers that I work with or my boss. How would we feel as adults going to work every day if we felt those things? Really bad, right? Is it fair to assume that we have students who wake up every day and say, number one, I have no idea what is expected of me. Like some classes, maybe I understand, but there's a lot of times that I feel like I don't know what I'm doing. Number two, I feel like people are always telling me what I'm doing wrong, or what do I need to do better, or what I'm allowed to do, or what I can't do. And number three, I feel, they wouldn't use this word, but disconnected. I don't feel like I have people who really understand me, or who I feel connected to. Is it fair to say that we probably have students who think somewhat along those lines every day when they come to school, or at least feel that way? It's these students, right? Intrinsic motivation is three things, okay? We made it into five, but it's three things. Competence, autonomy, and relatedness. Let's put that in really easy use words. Competence, a sense of, I've got this, I can do it. How can we give our students a sense of, I can do it every single day? The I can do it might not be what the actual goal is, but how can we break down the goals and scaffold so that they can feel a sense of success every day? Competence. Number two, autonomy. I have some sense of control over how my day goes. Again, we're not letting them run the classroom, but how are we building in independence and choice? How are we giving students a feeling, a sense of, I've got some control over what happens during the day? My involvement is important in one way or another. Number two. Number three, relatedness, connection, which is ultimately what we're talking about here. How do I let my students know and feel that I've got their back, that I care about them as individuals, and that they matter? How do I make the students feel connected? We can have a whole other session talking about how to help students connect to one another when we talk about social skills and social thinking. But at least as teachers, how do we help students feel connected? And we end with a quote that we think about often. Got there in a minute. Kids who need the love the most will ask for it in the most unloving of ways. Think about that quote for a minute. Kids who need the love the most will ask for it in the most unloving of ways. When our students are feeling disconnected, when they're feeling incompetent, when they're feeling like they have no sense of control, they need the most love, and they'll likely ask for it in the most unloving ways. So being the amazing teachers that you are, thinking about just some strategies that you can continue to build into your everyday
will please God help you see more success for the students that need our love the most. Thank you so much for being here.
And we're done before the bell.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Hi. Thanks for coming.
You two know it's really funny.